Columbus is growing. Here at the Dispatch, we wanted to take a step back and look at what all this growth means. This program will explore the future of Columbus and Central Ohio. This is What's Next.
Welcome back to another episode of the CBUS Next podcast. We are launching another installment of our series. This one we are focusing all on health and science. My name is Michelle Everhart. I'm the digital news editor here at the Dispatch, and I am joined by our science environmental reporter, Marianne Renaud, and she wrote one of our stories this week about all about climate change. One of the more interesting parts of this that I found from her story says this: models suggest Ohio summers will be as hot as Arkansas by 2095, an average temperature of about 91 degrees from June to August. That's going to attract new pests, species, and diseases to our region. So, Marianne, tell us more what that's going to look like. What kind of species are going to be here? What kind are going to be pushed out? What can we expect?
So the thing with climate change to keep in mind is that we're talking about ecosystems heating up. We're talking about entire food webs changing, and animals have to respond to higher temperatures and other effects of climate change. So in a very basic sense, you're going to see animals that are adapted to colder climates get pushed out. So I don't have a lot of examples off the top of my head, but you know, in terms of when you look at Lake Erie, it'll be fish like lake trout, whitefish, walleye, yellow perch. Anything that's adapted to cold waters is going to find itself in a sort of unfavorable environment. And we'll see animals that are adapted to warmer climates start to sort of migrate north. And we've started to see that. And as you mentioned, the story talks about that some of those include diseases or pests that do better in warmer climates. It's I don't have any species off the top of my head, but you can just sort of generally think about that. Anything that is sort of in the south of the country, we can expect to start to creep northward. And it's also a matter of which animals can survive other stresses on the environment, that some of which are related to climate change, some are totally separate. You know, we have issues with invasive species. We're going to have more storms. We're going to have, less cold winters. We also have, you know, more urban sprawl. So when you look down the road at what kind of animals are still going to be around or which ones will be new to Ohio, it's whichever ones can handle more heat and are more resilient to all of those different kinds of stresses.
Okay. You mentioned Lake Erie. We've heard a lot about toxic algae, especially there over the past few years. It got so bad a few years ago that Toledo residents couldn't even drink the tap water. With climate change, are the algae blooms likely to increase, and how bad could it get?
So one Ohio State aquatic ecologist told me that if the models that he's working with are right, we're going to see a doubling of the large blooms like the one we saw in Toledo, and that kind of we can guarantee that they're going to become more prominent and they're going to become more of a fact of life than they are now. That much is certain. A worst case scenario, Lake Erie, and this is really worst case scenario, it could be so choked by the algae and so lacking in oxygen that it becomes a dead zone. But that's not likely to happen because there are options in terms of reducing the nutrients that get dragged into Lake Erie and cause and feed those blooms. The big connection between climate change and toxic algae is that the warmer water is more conducive to the blooms. So it will get worse, but how much worse depends on more than just the climate. It also depends on pollution and runoff.
Okay. Now, agriculture is number one industry in Ohio. How could climate change, what will climate change mean for farmers?
Yeah, it will mean a lot. And the effects that relate to agriculture will also mean a lot because agriculture is, at its core, an industry that it depends on, is at the mercy of whatever ecosystem it's in. Mm-hmm. So farmers are going to have to handle more severe droughts, which means you know, they're going to have to rethink irrigation or what best practices are for irrigation. They're going to have those longer stretches, those longer dry stretches are going to potentially stress vegetation. So they might have to rethink what they plant, what can withstand long dry spells. And sort of on the total flip side, they're also going to be dealing with more intense bouts of rain. So that also is going to have an effect on their fields. Nights are going to get warmer and warmer. We're already starting to see that, which means that livestock and plants don't get to recover during the night. They don't get that cool stretch where they can cool off overnight. So that's expected to reduce grain yields. It's expected to reduce the rate of milk and egg and meat production. So there's going to be a lot of different things that farmers are going to have to think about. And one last one is similar to what we had this year. They're going to deal with those false starts to spring. Mm-hmm. You know, we had berries beginning to blossom and trees beginning to blossom way before the growing season started. And that's not always problematic, but it can be if, for example, a fruit starts to grow and then it snaps back into winter. So there's going to be a lot of things for farmers to think about and to have to react to.
And of course, that doesn't just affect farmers. That affects those of us who eat things from the farms, yeah. Which is everyone. I mean, that's going to affect your grocery bill and all of those kind of things. So it's not just, oh, those farmers have to worry about that. That's something we all are going to have to deal with.
And that's something that really struck me in reporting this story is that with climate change, it's part of this narrative that I see a lot in my reporting of biodiversity dwindling. Mm-hmm. So in the future, as conditions become more extreme, you find animals, plants, crops, the ones that are going to survive are the hardiest. So we're sort of going towards more monoculture type, you know, ecosystems where there might be a handful of species that thrive, and anything that is vulnerable or very sensitive to changing conditions might not survive. So for when you think about food production, I imagine that we'll see farmers start to pivot towards crops that are hardy, that mm-hmm. can resist all of this, and specialty items could get really expensive or might get more expensive because they will be much more difficult to actually grow.
Absolutely. In your story, there were suggestions of what can be done to slow climate change. Can you give us some of those?
Yeah, sure thing. So that's another factor in all of this is that because climate change's reach is so broad and it feels so pervasive and in some ways inevitable, it can be very easy for everyone, you and me, to kind of check out. But researchers do say there are plenty of things we can do to slow it. We are on the trajectory at a point in which we can't reverse. You know, there's mm-hmm. no way we can change some of these outcomes, but we can really slow things down. So things you can do, the easiest and kind of most obvious one is to reduce tailpipe emissions as much as you can. So whether that is when you buy your next car, considering electric or some kind of hybrid, using your car less, riding a bike, you know, maybe cutting down the number of times you get in your car in half and the other half you're opting for a bus or a carpool, biking, walking. That's a really big one. Making your house as sustainable as possible. So LED lights, solar panels, composting. Interestingly, food waste is a big issue for emissions because food produces methane mm-hmm. when it breaks down, which is pretty noxious and harmful for the environment. So even just being more careful with your grocery and buying the exact amount of food that your household needs or buying goods that won't spoil, you know, so getting dried goods, that can be actually really helpful too. Let's see, and then there's just little things I think everyone kind of knows. When you can, get reusable bags, reduce the amount of plastic that you use with reusable water bottles or by, you know, recycling those plastic bags. There are a lot of things that we can do.
Okay. What did you find most interesting about reporting this story?
I think it's interesting. It's also scary. Mm-hmm. But the idea that with all of this, we're sort of the entire global climate is kind of hurtling into some unknowns. So there are going to be thresholds that we're going to cross. We don't know when we're going to cross them or what's on the other side. There's going to be tipping points. There could be times when we have multiple simultaneous extreme weather events and we don't know how that will affect infrastructure in cities. So there's this whole component of we're playing an experiment with the world, and there are models that are getting more and more sophisticated and accurate, but we don't really, there's some of this that's just impossible to predict because there's so many different variables. And so that to me was really kind of interesting and scary, but I don't know. Yeah.
What would you like people to take away from your story?
Yeah. So there is, there's an actual phenomenon that's essentially climate change fatigue. You know, it can be very psychologically taxing to wrap your mind around all of this. And I think that it's also hard because the effect of what we do today or don't do today will take 20 or 40 years to show up. And so the scope of all of this is really broad. But climate change is going to affect everything from labor conditions for people who work outside to the delays in airplanes to, I read something yesterday about how warmer winters and hot summers are actually making it so that rats are multiplying incredibly fast. So we're going to So there's just all of these different ways in which climate change is going to permeate our lives. Right. And then at the same time, only about 1 in 3 Ohioans believe that climate change will harm them personally. So there's this sort of gap between the reality of it, which is we're not going to escape the effects of it, whether or not you believe that it's happening and that it's man-made. So I hope that any readers, what they take away is that believe it or not, you're going to feel the effects of this. So it is important that you engage with the best practices for slowing down the effects of climate change, that you read and just engage with it, because even if you ignore it now, you're not going to be able to ignore it when things really begin to get worse.
Thank you so much, Marianne, for joining us today. You can check out all of our great content at cbusnext.com. You can give us feedback by emailing us at cbusnext@dispatch.com. You can also fill out the form on our website and use the hashtag cbusnext. We will be back next week with another episode. Thanks so much.